Hello and welcome to the Life's Best Medicine podcast. This could be my last episode. I'm bringing on Ivor Cummins. I have royalty here, the Fat Emperor. This guy, I'm just going to tell you a background because this guy, I don't even know if Ivor knows this, but one of the hugest influences on me in medicine has been Ivor, a stinking engineer who started talking about this crazy Kraft test and insulin levels. And I heard him give this lecture and I was like, yeah, it's nice, but I'm the doctor. You're an engineer. You're not facing attorneys and legal fees and all this stuff. But he talked about the importance of insulin. And so I went back to my practice because I believe in trust, but verify. And I checked all my patients who had major cardiac events, multiple stents, bypass surgery. And lo and behold, every single one of them had high insulin levels, right? Every single one. Without exception, I thought this crazy guy might be right, you know. And I started looking at the coronary calcium scores, and he saved a lot of my patients because I said, they have low clinical risk. Let's just check and see. Oh, huge coronary calcium or a very high LDL with zero coronary calcium. So these are important things. And so I've risen to root cause, and he's a crazy combination of people. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But first, Ivor, I want to welcome you, man. Thanks for all you're doing. Then you took a huge stance on COVID at the very beginning and reviewed all the data and literature and talked to world experts. And you stood up against like everyone. And I was like, man, either Ivor's gone off his rails, but I had the misfortune of knowing you and knowing your integrity because, a lot of the slides, and another thing for people to understand, I started talking about this stuff and I said, Ivor, can I use one of your slides? He goes, here's my slide set, use whatever you want. Right. So I use his slides all the time. Every one of my talks, I use one of his slides at least, multiple usually. Ben Bickman's another one like that. Yeah. A lot of people, Jason Fung is another one. I really think it's important that people know who these people are behind the scenes, the character, integrity, kindness. Yeah. He was the first guy in this low carb community goes, hey, let's have a cup of coffee and I'll explain this stuff to you, doc, because you clearly don't get it. Right. So, Ivor, welcome. It really is an honor having you. And I appreciate all you're doing. And man, you are a tough dude, man. There's no doubt about that.
Hey, thanks a lot, Brian. It's great to be here. I haven't seen you in a while, and with all the madness that's going on,
Oh,
but
last time I saw you in person was in Denver, right? When all this
oh,
madness, we had to leave early. This is exactly when it was starting right then.
yeah, and that was be. I didn't realize how insane it was going to get within even weeks. And you asked how I got into it. Well, I got interested when they began to impose on freedoms and shut down societies, and I'd already seen the Diamond Princess data. And I'd also taken enough interest to look at the Chinese data and saw the 10 times risk for elevated age, COPD, all the classic insulin resistant states. So I kind of thought naively, well, this is going to bring a focus onto metabolic health and insulin resistance, the very things you mentioned. And I thought that would be a good thing. Obviously, it'll be sad. It's a severe flu equivalent in the numbers. So there's going to be a lot of elderly people, frail people, immunocompromised people, get very sick and many times die. And but that's no one's fault, I figured. That's a flu or COVID, whatever it is. It's no one's fault specifically, so we accept that. But it'll focus us on metabolic health, which is a good thing because it could save many, many more people. And then, of course, everything went mad. So my initial interest, I got engaged for that reason, and then I began to realize there's something else. There's a subtext here. There's a subcurrent. Why are they doing this? And I began to think that even from, early April, when the lockdown kind of the curves curled over as we knew they'd curl over. It's kind of seasonal depending on the region, and you get immunity building up and the susceptible pass, sadly, and the curve will follow the curves of everything for past millennia. But when the curves came down, not really due to the lockdown, we know that now from the science, they wanted to keep the lockdowns and they were in love with them. And then I said, well, hold on, this is going to cause way more death and suffering than COVID ever could. Why are they doing this? And it began to really annoy me.
Yeah, and that's a hard thing, especially when you start seeing it. I know you reach out to a lot of people and you looked and you research and you present your data, and then people say, this guy's crazy because he disagrees with all the experts. But then you look at the predictions the experts made, 2.2 million deaths within months, and they were totally off. And you say, well, how is that? And then they start putting a lot of lockdowns when they see the curve is going to be lowering anyways. And then they say, well, that's what's causing it. But you predict it was going to happen well before all these things.
Yeah, well, it was inevitable, really, because we had, again, the Diamond Princess cruise ship. You know, there were 7 deaths out of 3,700. There were a few more later. They were all in 80s and generally late 80s. No one was really seriously affected from the 2,400 staff because they were not elderly. And like, it was a Petri ship, I called it. It was a supercharged transmission vessel. So they were stuck in there for weeks with shared, air conditioning, and they didn't even know what was happening. So it's super spread, a crucible. So you get to see the long-term probable kind of asymptote of what damage it will do. And we got the answer. And Professor Michael Levitt, who I interviewed soon afterwards, said, yeah, in February, he saw that. He saw the China data, same as me. He did more mathematics. I only did a quick mental tot. Came to the same answer. And yeah, we knew that the curl over in China, even the curve was clearly a Gompertz type curve, which just means that it accelerates very fast for a few days and then it begins to slow down its acceleration to a natural curl over, depending on the region. Some regions are longer, flatter, like, you know, in India often or in Peru, because that's the viral triggering mechanisms. They're very complex. But we kind of knew that. And then we watched this kind of group psychosis, mass psychosis emerge. And Neil Ferguson from Imperial College, Neil had been wrong on everything, foot and mouth disease and all the prior potential epidemics, you know, the mad cow disease. He'd been wrong. But he's ultra pharma funded. Maybe that's a connection. And he came out, his data and predictions for UK, England were 500,000 without any measures taken. So he's out by a factor of around 10 per year, per season. And his numbers said that Sweden would have around 80,000 dead within a couple of months without lockdowns. And they had a few thousand in over a year in excess mortality. So these predictions were clearly absurd when you looked at it. Yeah, clearly.
And I think clinically, as we look back, you know, I think one of the things that troubled me, and I actually reached out to you privately, I said, is this Drosden paper, is this paper that all the PCR testing has, is this really as crazy as they're saying? It was submitted for publication. There was no peer review. It was done within, I think, a day or two of receiving it, which usually takes 6 months or 6 weeks at least. And you think, wow, we based everything on this. Because I kept seeing that. And I was concerned saying, how come they're calling it cases and not sick people, not sick cases? Because all the testing says clinical correlation. You can't just, this test does not say they have the disease. That's what it says. And it says you cannot test asymptomatic people, yet we mandated it. And you think, how can this be? If I get exposed today and I test myself, I'm not going to see it, even if I am exposed. I'm going to miss it on that first day. I have to be symptomatic. And I think that's where things got really crazy because the numbers kept skyrocketing. And we saw that and it caused a fear and panic mode. And when we're in fear and panic mode, we don't make good decisions. If we're out there drowning in the middle of the ocean and we don't have a life raft, we can't make a decision. But if someone throws a life raft, then you can think about it for a second and take a breath and figure out your options.
Yeah, for sure. And you're absolutely right. The PCR is an unmitigated disaster. So it's very precise and it finds tiny viral fragments and pieces of dead virus and live virus, depending on the person. But it's too precise in finding and multiplying up tiny viral fragments. So it suffers from that problem of being too accurate in a sense for finding these fragments. The perfect test to manage a population disease is rapid antigen. Now, people criticize rapid antigen because it doesn't find as many people positive, right? But that's good, actually, because it finds the people who are generally infectious. And because it's so cheap and so fast, you don't have this couple of day delay and huge cost. So it's a practical test that finds infectious people. But the system, for whatever reason, like you said, from the very start, was in love with PCR. And perhaps we should look back to 2009, the swine flu debacle. So they tried to foist a pandemic when the swine flu came in and it collapsed in utter embarrassment. And then there were millions paid out in compensation for unnecessary medications. But that swine flu pandemic was created by the WHO. And that's a reality. they took the pandemic definition, they took out all references to severity of the disease, and they left it that they could call anything a pandemic. And the PCR test was used all summer in the UK, and they had the highest PCR positivities ever seen because they were testing so much. But they had the lowest death rates in general for that whole summer for 20 years. So in other words, if you use PCR, you can create what we call a case-demic. You're seeing cases. They're not sick, most of them. You may not have an overloaded hospital. Nothing may really be going on that's severe. But everyone thinks there is because they're all watching the cases, Birdie. And in the middle of the real epidemic surges, when the hospitals were full, in fairness, the PCR testing results had relevance. The problem is when you have low impact in hospitals and mortality, and there's nothing really going on, the PCR will still give you a sense of panic. And I think that's why they're wedded to it. It's the crux. This thing is built on PCR madness.
And also, you know, the problem is it caused a panic. And so what the hospitals did is said, we got to open up rooms, and they shoved all the sick people into the nursing homes with the most vulnerable. And if they had listened to what you were saying, and you right from the start said, hey, it's the older obese, diabetic, metabolically sick people are going to die from this. These guys didn't listen. And now they're saying, oh, if you get your vaccination, we're going to give you Krispy Kremes. You see the mayor of New York eating a hamburger and fries because you get free hamburger and fries. Crazy. If you get this in. Have we forgotten that when we look at, and I know you're a numbers guy, so you could probably throw the numbers out, but how many people die of obesity related diseases, like, you know, diabetes complications, cancer, cardiac disease, all these things? Have we forgotten about all these other things? My job as a doc is to say, sit back and say, what is the most likely thing to kill this patient in front of me? So when Joe Rogan said, hey, if you're 18 years old and you're healthy, what are your odds of dying of COVID versus having a complication? I think he knows more medicine than most doctors do, because everything has a risk and a benefit, right? I don't walk around with a hard hat all day just because I think possibly space debris could fall on my head, right? It's possible that it could happen, but you don't mandate this on the entire population. I think that's what's happening, is we've lost our sense of logic. And I think this whole thing, we kind of sat there and said, well, this doesn't make sense. If I'm sitting down, I don't spread it. If I'm eating, I don't spread it. But if I'm standing, I do. But if I'm sitting on the beach, I spread it. And then all these arbitrary rules started. In the airports, you're social distancing. Then you get on the plane and you're jammed in with everyone, you know, and you think, well, at some point you have to say this. And you know, Twitter wasn't the place, but I say, okay, do masks work? Yes or no? If they do, then why do I need to social distance when I'm wearing it? Right. And then you start going through this whole entourage and you say, OK, if vaccinations work, why are you wearing two masks after vaccination? Plus, what was your data for two masks? A study with mannequins done by the CDC that has no clinical relevant. It's not relevant to humanity because they taped masks on dummies and basically sprayed stuff on there with no COVID. So how do you say that's going to cause more COVID? I mean, it just. They make these studies that are crazy. And then the good studies, they ridiculed. And I think we saw this where good doctors, good people stood up and said, hey, look, I'm treating people and they're getting better. And then they got kicked off. So I'm surprised you didn't get kicked off of everything, Ivor, because you were the fly in the ointment. You were standing up saying, this is madness. And you took a strong stand. And a lot of people said, why is Ivor taking such a strong? Why is he out there risking his credibility? And that speaks to you as a man, really. That's what spoke to me, is sitting there going, man, he's taking a huge risk. Because me, I'm thinking things and I'm observing a lot, but I'm like, yeah, I'm not really comfortable saying stuff because the emotional, it doesn't matter what the reality is, what the emotional and the perception is.
Yeah, for sure, Brian. Well, there's a lot in there. But just on the motivation, my whole life, basically, I have a fundamental thing. It's about technical truth. So even though as a manager of people for 15 years, and, you know, I would have manipulated scenarios and all, that's people management, right? I always was offended by the technical truth being twisted, right? So even from my early days as an engineer, I got in a lot of trouble because things were massaged by management team in my first job. And I said, hold on, that's not what caused that. That's untrue. So I got a lot of hot water. And I kept it my whole career. There's something sacrosanct about technical truth, possibly because I'm such an ultra-technical individual. There's something almost spiritual about the technical truth must always be known. Even if you kind of, you're untruthful about a scenario, you know, to a manipulated situation politically, you know, all of that's okay, but not technical. So that's one thing that drove me all along that I won't compromise on. And the second thing is the future for the children, the next generation. So I have five children. We're ultra focused, myself, my wife, on the future for the next generation, and that they have it as good it as we had it, and don't let evil, bad people ruin the world for them. So I feel strongly about that. Everything I do, you know, commercially, work-wise, I don't want to have plenty of money when I'm retired. I'm not going to have a crappy private sector pension. It's complete junk compared to public center or sector pensions in Ireland. But I don't care. I don't need to have a boat or holiday homes when I'm retired. I don't care. All I want is my bike and be able to read books. But I do want to build a future for the children and help them. So anyway, that's the second thing, the future, the next generation, and that is being ransacked and urinated on. This madness that's driven by international organizations, idiot politicians, panicked, cowardly people, and so many more bad things, they're driving a system that's ruining the future for the children. That's unacceptable. And I could see that in April 2020, where this was going. And you know, to your point about masks, clearly they're nonsense. They have some effect, but it's just risible. But in Europe, in June, July, 2020.
And by the way, these are studies from Stanford, you know, the Danish study. They're huge studies, and they couldn't get them published, and they had a bunch of trouble. And then, you know, Yale got in trouble. A guy from Harvard got in trouble because he's saying, look, the numbers aren't what they're saying. And all these people got blackballed. And then the frontline doctors, you know, because they said hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, say, well, are they crazy or not? Well, at least hear their side. In court, you got to hear both sides. You can't say we're just going to hear one side and, you know, the other people are crazy. You can't have tech deciding who's right and wrong. And these are frontline doctors with people dying in their hands. And to tell a doctor like me, wait till the patient turns blue and then you could do something. It's like, well, that doesn't seem like a very good option to me.
Well,
right.
Remember the forces, and there's no conspiracy here. We know there's international organizations of enormous influence and power. Who are working constantly since last March to increase the tempo of fear, to increase draconian restrictions, to promote products and medical products. That's just a reality. It's screaming in our face. How much influence do they have? Well, they've done very well. Now, I think I always describe it as two engines. People wonder and they ask me, but Ivor, how is this happening? Why? And I say it's quite simple in an engineering sense. The big engine driving this madness is the stupid politicians who are covering themselves, listening to the mad modeling and putting in restrictions and paying enormous sums for advertising campaigns to get people to comply. But then the people get terrified and psychosed. Right? Paranoid. They're getting propagandized. And they, in turn, demand back from the government more safety. So you've got this feedback loop like insulin resistance, and it keeps getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And that's what happened. Now, that's the big engine of catastrophic feedback. That's really driving the bus. However, that engine finds it hard to be self-sustaining at the same time. So there's a smaller engine behind the scenes that are the international organizations. And they're hugely influential to the politicians and the governments. That's why we see lockstep, everyone the same in all the countries. And they are continually feeding and running the big engine and stoking it. So they're very important, because if you took them away, the engine might actually calm and slow down. But you can't, because of the small engine. So that's the way to view this kind of mass psychosis. But risks, you mentioned risks, and this is important for people. I did the risks in Ireland the other day. Now, America is similar, but I'll get into that. So basically, after over a year and two full annual seasons of this flu-like virus, we now have the numbers, and we know that in the two seasons where it spiked and the virus triggered, we had up to 25% positivity in PCR. So it riddled the population, absolutely riddled. So what was the actual risk after all that happening? And now we're actually coming out of it. Well, if you're under 70, the risk is around 1 in 7,500. That's for under 70s. Under 50s, the risk of mortality was around 1 in 50,000, right? And under 25-year-old, the risk was around 1 in 280,000. So that's half the risk of dying from falling off stepladders or downstairs using US data.
And I think that's a huge point. That's a huge point of looking at, you have to look at the odds and the numbers. And you say, well, that, what are my odds of an 18-year-old kid, you know, falling off a stepladder, right? Do you outlaw all stepladders? Do you not drive your car? And I think we get to that point where we can get ridiculous in what we're doing. Yeah. And I think also to add to what you're saying from a medical perspective, because I had to sit back and think about it and say, why is this happening? Because, you know, in Orange County, they did a study, 80% of people who were PCR positive were asymptomatic. And they said, oh my gosh, this is really bad. Why is this bad? That's a good thing. If they're not having any symptoms, the immunization is not going to help you if you're asymptomatic when you get the thing. Or you didn't get the thing and there was a false positive PCR. Or there's a lot of other possibilities. But, you know, when people saw cases, because if we said, if we just differentiated symptomatic cases from cases, right, people who had symptoms actually, the numbers are dwarfed. Now they're saying, you know, 5% of these COVID deaths that we keep talking about are actually from the disease process, not from other underlying conditions. And I think these are numbers that people just don't know because they're never told.
They're never told. And that's the thing. The reality is Professor Beda Stadler, the immunologist emeritus professor in Switzerland, he's the vaccine pope of Europe. He's an industry guy, but he's been very honest. I interviewed him twice. And he said, basically, for this new virus, because it shares so many proteins we can recognize from prior SARS viruses and coronaviruses, he said around 80% of the people are de facto effectively immune to it, even when it first came in last year. And he was absolutely right. There's only a few percent after a mega spread in Europe, two full seasons, and now it's fading. It'll come back next winter, but it's done most of its impact. So here we are, and only a few percent of people were actually affected by it, even though vast percentages were exposed. So the reality was, it was never the case that all of us were exposed. We have mucosal immunity, mucosa that stopped the virus. We have innate immunity that knocks it out before you even get antibodies. We have T-cell immunity. We have layer after layer in our immune systems. And the fact is, the vast majority of people, even if you put them all in a crucible and put in SARS-CoV-2, the vast percentage would not have any notable effect. It's a new virus.
And if they already had it, already had it and were reinfected, they'd have a more mild case.
Yeah, of course. Or new strain.
And I think when we look at that, and that's the problem, is when we say now you're either vaccinated or not, but what about natural immunity to people who've already had it, right? Or that survived it. And I think all these questions are, you know, it's hard because people just don't know. And it's fear. And there's a lot of that. And that's why I started this podcast, because I saw the fear and lack of hope. And as a doc, guess what I'm seeing? Suicide, depression, anxiety, stress, all these anxiety relief. You try to go on a diet when you're stressed and anxious, forget it. And you're worried all the time. You can't go to the gym, but they give you free donuts when you get a vaccination. I think these kind of things, the insanity. And the other thing, Ivor, because you say, how can this be? How could it be? My attorney for my business, we were talking, he said one of his clients, he was in the hospital for 10 days, was tested for COVID 9 times. And they kept cycling people that were coughing into his room. Right? 9 times in 10 days. Is that to help the patient? No, it's to get a diagnosis code, right? One of my patients last week was admitted for double vision. He was tested twice overnight for COVID. He was tested in the ER, and he was tested the next day again. And had he been in the hospital without getting his MRI and all that stuff, he would have been tested multiple times. How much money is that? How much money is that just in that patient? So I think it's these kind of things when you look and say, well, because if I get the diagnosis code, it's not just a regular pneumonia. So one of my patients, a good friend of ours, admitted to the hospital with a pneumonia, tested for COVID every day, diagnosis on discharge, COVID-related pneumonia. How can that be? He said, he called me and said, how can that be, Brian? I never tested positive, but they must know something I don't know. And when you see numbers like that, but the hospital knows they'll get paid more. So I think there's going to be a reckoning of all these things. And then when they start saying, wait, this actually wasn't. A friend of mine is an ER doc, and he says after accidents, people come in, you know, dead, you know, they do CPR, and they test for COVID, positive COVID death. And makes you insane. It makes him insane because he said he has not seen a case of the flu. Last year, we had, I think, 80,000 cases of the flu in San Diego County. He has not seen one case this year. How's that? He said, I can't explain it, right? And Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, these kind of things you see and you think, wow, this is just like, you have to use your common sense. Sometimes say something doesn't add up. Something's not right. And there's vested interest everywhere. The more testing you do, the more, you know, I dealt with it, Ivor, and it's so sad to me, but I have a PCR in my office. I got it. You know, I ordered it early on. It took me almost a year to get it. Right. But then I realized, and I asked them these questions. I said, can I test asymptomatic people? Cause I'm on the campus of a college campus. And they said, yeah, you can. I said, well, is it effective? Is it tell me anything? I could test a shoe or a rock, right? So if I test asymptomatic people, what does that tell me? And they said, you get reimbursed for doing every test, doctor. That was the answer. And I said, can I get that in writing? And oh, no, we don't do it in writing. So I think it's one of those things you start looking and you say, wow, there's a problem. You know, there is a problem because ethically I could start testing everyone and make a lot of money, but I didn't because your data, all the data I'm seeing and saying, look, if you're symptomatic, yes, I think it's a reasonable to check and see what it is. But the problem was when people were sent out, they said, I'm not, if someone calls a lot of medical offices with a cough or a cold, they said, we don't want to see you, go get tested for COVID first. So all these people are getting tested, you know, they have strep throat and they're getting tested for COVID, comes back positive, then it's a COVID case. And so, and then all their people are getting, and then it turned into this huge snowball effect. So I think it's, you know, and with you, I didn't want to talk too much of the science. I knew we had to talk the science because, you know, people need to know that you have data and what you're doing. And I think, you know, you have so much evidence and you've been proven right over and over, yet people say this Ivor Cummins guy is off the rails. What drove you during all this, man?
Well, what drove me are the two things, truth in science, truth in technical matters is just paramount to me. So I'll never back down on that. And the other thing is the future of our society, a free, liberal Western society that all my children and everyone's children can continue to flourish in. And both those things are being utterly mangled, ransacked. I mean, I've said before, urinated on with the utmost disrespect. So I would say to the people who question me and they say, oh, lockdowns work and oh, you're killing granny. Those guys questioning me are killing granny because there's very good studies which demonstrate that if you do manage to flatten the curve using lockdown stuff, you'll cause way more collateral damage, suffering, and death in the long run through the lockdown. But you'll also suppress, if you're successful, community immunity in the healthy. And that will put granny at greater risk and kill more grannies next season, right? So the reality is these people bleating and screeching that the experts are right, well, A, they're wrong, and B, they're hurting people. So I know for a fact that the people who disagree with me, even in the low carb community, they are causing suffering and death way more than any savings. I know that for a fact. That is, well, multiple publications, Brian, show the lockdown cost benefit is absurdly negative against health and, you know, population health and economies and freedoms and everything. So, you know,
dying alone in the hospital. One of my patients is that she runs a huge senior home. And I said, man, it must be tough with COVID. And she said, yeah, we had a lot of COVID related deaths. And I said, really? And how many had the virus? And she said, well, none in our facility. And I said, what do you mean COVID related deaths? And she said, well, loneliness, sadness, yeah. Their family didn't visit them. They were locked in the room. The dementia got worse. They declined. And you see the effects that it had on the seniors. And some of the seniors just said, you know, I'd rather die than live like this. I haven't played. Now they're playing canasta. They're going and doing stuff and they're engaging more. And it's like, you could see the joy, like my patients, even though, you know, a lot of patients I do via Zoom if they're in a facility, and man, they're so happy to have human contact. Like to, you know, it's amazing how important the human contact and, you know, touching someone and loving someone and looking in their eyes and seeing their smile. It is really, there really is a profound effect of not seeing that.
It's a profound part of being human. And I say to people, the lockdown and all this nonsense, right? It's not borne out by the science. We have 40 plus papers and articles now that all say the same thing. And you only need a few to disprove a hypothesis. That's the nature of proof in science. If you find some black swans, the hypothesis is dead. You only need a few, but we have 40 papers. So that's a given. And the damage that's being done, they've taken away everything, elderly people meeting their relatives, the human contact, the theatres, the bars, the sports. In Ireland, they've decimated the sport for the young. All the restaurants are shut. All the small stores and businesses are effectively destroyed, yada, yada, yada. So they've basically ransacked. And again, I want to use that word. They've ransacked our society, our economies, and our public health in the name of saving people. That's actually false, that they're not really even saving anyone. So the people who are questioning me, to be honest, and I don't mean to be dramatic here, but there's blood on their hands. Literally, what they accuse me of, they are doing, and I am not doing. I'm only trying to bring science, logic, and rationality back, and ethics and humanity, to your point, Brian. That's what I'm doing. And a lot of people are recognizing me for it. Professors, doctors, scientists, groups like Pandata, groups like Heart. We have an Irish group of around 30 surgeons, doctors, and consultants, specialists. And we've been working together since last July. And we know we're correct. Now, that sounds arrogant. So I'm going to qualify that. There is no 100% knowing you're correct in science or technical matters. But there's a point at which you know you're overwhelmingly correct against or versus the people who are holding the opposite view. And once you know you're there, you have an obligation as a decent, ethical human being to try and right the wrongs that are perpetrated by the other people. And that's what we're doing. So for what it's worth, if you want to get biblical, we know we're righteous. And that helps, Brian, when you're attacked by all these goons and the media. I've been in newspapers over here in the West, in Europe. It doesn't matter because you know you're doing the right thing and trying to bring sanity back to your society. Therefore, it doesn't matter how much you're abused. I have the advantage too, my wife's first class honors in engineering and obviously technically pretty sharp. And she knows this too. And all my children know it. And my friends in the area, we call around to each other. We all know it. So we have a huge number of people who know that this is madness. So the majority think otherwise. How many times in history have the majority been wrong, right? Dutch tulip crisis.
Witch trials. This is why the cancel culture scares me so much. Because when you forget history, because I'm telling you, on my mind, I'm not like you, man. I want to be less controversial. I just want to say, that's my nature. But when you sit back and I've always thought my whole life, I thought, how could the German people allow Hitler to do what he did? How could they allow? And all the people that judged them for all this eternity, all this time, said, how could they do it? How come they didn't do anything? Those are the same people who are cowering in the corner right now, not saying anything, because the people in Germany knew if you stood up and said something, why? Because I have family that I've talked to and they said, hey, if you say anything, you're dead. You're going to kill your family and do all these things. And for me, when you came out talking about this stuff, I was thinking this guy is like people who say, hey, there's a problem, guys. We have a problem in our society that we need to address. And those people were killed first, right? They were my grandfather was sent to the Russian front to die because he said, I don't believe in this cause, right? Yeah. So it's one of those things where you realize, hey, you speak up and you're dead. In your case, I've always wondered, and I wanted to talk to you about this because I think it's important, fear. Where did fear for you, like you're a man and you're talking about this stuff and you're it's funny when you said biblical. What I was thinking this morning when I woke up, I go, Ivor's kind of, what's Ivor? I was thinking, and I may not get into heaven for saying this, but I say you're kind of a combination of Jesus and Moses and Marcus Aurelius, right? I think you're a guy who will fight to the death, for what you stand for. But I think what Jesus did is he said, look, I'm trying to help people. And they paraded through the streets and they spit on him and mocked him. And so I was thinking, because I always thought this all along, I thought the very people Ivor is trying to help and educate are the very people who are attacking him the most, right? And you could have been wrong. So I said, Ivor may be wrong. Let's wait and see. I'm not taking a strong stand at the beginning. I'm going to wait and weigh this out. When they said two weeks to flatten the curve. And then you say, well, 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Now it's like 6 months. Now it's a year. Now it's a year and a half, right? And you think it's 2 weeks. And then the second wave, I thought, well, if the second wave coming, how come they're not building mass units in hospitals? Because they knew the second wave wasn't coming. If they knew it was coming, they would have been building stuff. We had mercy ships that never sailed. We had all these things. And everyone said, it's happening. It's going to happen. You guys just don't understand. So, and you said, it's not going to happen. And it didn't happen. Had it have happened, then I said, well, Ivor's on his own. I'm not associated with this guy anymore, right? But you knew the science and you knew history, and you look at the natural, because we know, and Ioannidis from Stanford said at the very beginning, I look back at his stuff that he said back in March of 2020, and you think, wow, this guy was right. And he got, everyone said he's lost his marbles. He's the most published guy around, very well respected until he stood up to the, so I'm thinking, well, Ivor's going on the same road as this guy. It's a tough road to take when everyone thinks you're nuts, right? Like Moses out yelling in the desert saying crazy stuff, and everyone thinks, is this guy crazy or not? Does he, you know? And I think that's why you're a combination of those guys. Plus, Jesus wasn't afraid to flip the tables over. And Marcus Aurelius was going to fight to the death no matter what because of truth and what you believe. And I think, you know, I see that in you, and I don't want to, you know, people probably quote me and say, he says Ivor's Jesus. I'm not saying that. Trust me. God, please hear me. I'm not saying that because I know, but if there's anyone I want to have a glass of wine and talk about life with, you're it, right? Or have coffee in the morning right now. I'm enjoying this. But really having integrity and standing up and saying, look, everyone, it's what Tim Noakes did. He went from the most decorated guy. He could have just quietly went off and said, okay, you could have just said, okay, I'm not going to fight this anymore. At some point you say, and I think that's what happened to a lot of good people. They go, I'm not going to get ridiculed and mocked. And, you know, I got mocked when I said, guys, cases are not the same as symptomatic cases. And I got just crucified on Twitter. And then I had the craziness to talk about hope and faith. Like, hey guys, there'll be a better day. We got to band together. You know, it's hard. And when you separate people, we see that everyone separates and all these things that we're seeing in society all comes together. And you say, well, what are we leaving for our kids? You know?
Yeah, that's no. Thanks for the comparisons. I'm certainly not as pious as.
For the record, yes, I'm saying that.
Yeah, no, it's the behaviors, if you will, or standing up for something. I remember one of my favorite authors. He does the Bosch series of books. It's actually LA, I think. I can't remember his name, but that character says, you know, you either stand for, what was it again? I'll have to think of the phrase. Everybody counts or nobody counts. And it was basically the phrase to me, and you got to stand for something and you got to stand for what's right. And that's just it. Now, if I was going to be killed, I mean, that's a different level of threat. But nowadays, the threat is to be ridiculed, ostracized, and pushed out of your circle. And yeah, I've lost a lot of friends and relations, but it doesn't matter. I was talking to my wife the other night and I said, if I lose them all, it doesn't matter because everybody counts or nobody counts. You have to stand up. If something horrific is happening to your world and your children's future, come on. I mean, being ostracized and ridiculed by these idiots, it can't count for anything. It just can't. So the other key thing, though, Brian, is we've got all of these incredible people around the world. I mean, I'm directly communicating with hundreds from many organizations. And we're all not in groupthink. We're the opposite of groupthink. We challenge each other because that's the way real technical people behave. They challenge their own hypothesis. They agonize. Are we right, though? There could be a massive wave. What about the variants? We're always questioning ourselves. They running this shit show, they're not questioning themselves. They're just saying blah, 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 and driving propaganda. So, but there's so many good people. The funny thing is, for all the people I've lost, I've gained new people. And guess what? The new people are, by definition, how they are on my side, they're the best people. So I've actually lost people who have failed. I mean, you talk about the reckoning, or if you want to get biblical, you know, the judgment where people are found wanting. Well, the people who have left me, they have been judged. They don't realize it. They think they're judging me. They've actually judged themselves. And they've come out on the wrong side. So I will just have sympathy for them somewhat. It's annoying, but forgive them for they know not what they do is the only thing you can say about those people. And I'm probably better off without them. But what have I gained? I've gained much more people who I never would have met otherwise. And they've been judged to be the best people of all, the most ethical, the most scientifically intuitive, the most data-centric. And guess what? All the Irish ones as well are great fun. We've had big barbecues and parties with 20 people in the middle of the lockdown and out in various areas. And they're fantastic. And we're all able to still be good spirited in spite of all of us being outraged at what's being done to the children. So it's not like I'm left on my own and it's all horrifying for me. I mean, I'd like to claim I'd still be as good as I am with that scenario. I actually do have the advantage of having all these fantastic people all over the world, and we're all supporting each other. And that is huge. So big shout out to every one of them, including yourself, Brian.
No, you know, I respect integrity. I respect, you could be wrong, but if you have an integrity, because I know
I'm
you.
I'm not.
Because I know you in this way. And I go, look, Ivor, you know, I don't know if you remember, in Denver, as a matter of fact, I said, look, I'm speaking to a bunch of people tomorrow. I'm using one of your slides. Are you 100% sure it's correct? You go, Brian, someone questioned me on it and I triple checked it and I went back. It is correct, right? Mm. Because you'll be able to say, if it's wrong, you'll say, hey, it's wrong. I know your integrity. And that's the thing is there anything like while we're talking about it, anything that you said at the beginning where you want to walk it back or you say, well, maybe it wasn't accurate? Or is there anything that you like said, ah, crud, there's something that's like, you know, maybe I wasn't 100% right, or based on previous data, but it didn't turn out that way?
Yeah, so that's a great one. And just on being wrong, yeah, another thing that marks the people who are true scientists is they agonize over being wrong. They always question their own hypotheses, and they always agonize. My whole career, I've woken up in the middle of the night countless times when I've made a big decision with, say, $1 million of inventory. It's going to be processed in a certain way. I'm always agonizing because I don't ever want to be wrong. And that's the way you got to be. But in terms of, well, what was wrong? Well, first, I'd say that the framework I put out from April 2020 is overwhelmingly correct in every aspect. So in terms of a population strategy, I was, and all my colleagues are, effectively completely correct. However, there will be pieces within it, often ones that don't matter too much, that won't have been precisely correct because it's a complex evolving situation. So what was wrong was I supported masks at the start based on a Taiwanese documentary and some mechanistic studies showing aerosols, and I jumped too soon. I didn't realize that the real world research and real world effect was almost meaningless. So I supported masks incorrectly at the start. That's one thing. The second thing is we underestimated in Europe the seasonal clipping short of the epidemic. So we figured that most of the curlover was the buildup of immunity and a natural curlover. And that was correct. But we didn't quite realize that the season in Europe had cut it short and the seasonal effect was really huge. And therefore, we underestimated the second half of the epidemic that came at the end of the summer in Europe. Not by a huge amount on average, but in the UK, England particularly, we underestimated the size of their second kind of final big hump. And that gave our enemies a great attack point. You said that the second one wouldn't be much higher mortality than prior winters. And it was, you know, chunky. But that was only in UK, England. If you look at Europe as a whole, you know, we weren't even so far off in that. And being wrong on a prediction and then understanding why, like the seasonal effect was bigger than we thought, that's actually not bad at all. Because our framework was and is correct through this whole year. Like Greg Barrington Declaration, gbdeclaration.org, came out last September. They are correct. Focused protection. It's a no-brainer and agrees with all of the science. The healthy build immunity while you very aggressively protect the susceptible. And our society didn't do that. They didn't protect anyone in the end, but they could have done more for those people who are susceptible. And you know the killer, and this one kills me, Brian, and you came up with it yourself there independently. In the summer, they were all threatening us with a Spanish flu-style second wave of horror. They were all telling us this with advertising campaigns. They brought in mandatory masks in the middle of the summer when nothing was going on, which was just loco. And there were threatening waves. You know how many hospitals and cross-training of paramedics to be pseudo-ICU people and preparation there was for this so-called second wave that was coming? Zero. So the guys telling us that there's a big second wave and we all need to lock down, they do nothing to prepare for it. They sit on their hands, they wait and watch, salivating, waiting for the winter. Sure enough, in the winter, the virus triggers, not to do with lockdowns or masks. It's complex. You've got to read Hope Simpson. The virus triggers, and then they go, yes, Now, I'm not saying they said yes, but they behaved like, we have cases and now we have ICU. But why didn't they do anything to prepare for it? They lost trillions of dollars with nonsense lockdowns. They didn't spend a few tens of millions on completely preparing the system to care for these poor people. They did nada, nothing, just lockdowns.
Yeah, and that tells you something. That tells you something. And you, as common sense, you have to sit back and say, if I really believe this, if my governor of my state really believed it, he wouldn't be having out dinner with the same people who are telling me I can't prescribe medications to early on to help people. Yeah. And they're out doing the same thing that they're telling us not to do. And we see the hypocrisy. Either they don't believe it or they're right. I mean, you have to look at that and step back and say all over the place. Because if they're really fearful, they're going to be wearing oxygen masks and doing all this stuff. So I think it's one of those things you have to look at logically and say, does this make sense? And so many of us, we're sitting there saying, does this make sense or not? And I had to weigh the options because you go, look, lockdown for 2 weeks. Okay, it makes sense. Let's see what happens. And we don't know. I don't know. I mean, this could be a new thing that we've never seen before that acts differently than everything else in the history of man. But then you say, okay, does natural immunity not help? If I've had COVID, right? And I think that's what we're seeing as a doctor. I'm seeing the worst cases of COVID reactions with the vaccination or people who recently had COVID and they're getting vaccinated again. And you said, they never studied it for this. I can't use things off label that was never studied yet. Pregnant women, not studied, right? Young kids, not studied. And they're saying, let's vaccinate. And because I think, Ivor, what we've seen, and I think this is the trouble, and on Twitter, this isn't the format to discuss this. But when you step back and you say, the reason we locked the schools down was the whole argument was to protect grandma and grandpa. But now grandma and grandpa have been vaccinated. They have the option. Most have. So now you're saying, well, the kids weren't dying and they weren't having the problem. Why would we vaccinate all of them once grandma and grandpa and the most feeble are vaccinated? The other question that's always bothered me during this whole thing was, how come all the homeless aren't gone? They're living out in the streets. They're in the cold. They're exposed. They're sleeping right next to each other to stay warm. And it should have spread through and killed them all. Maybe they had some kind of immunity, right? And there's a study actually that talks about that with having immunity to old coronaviruses over time.
That's an amazing point, Brian, because I'd forgotten that. And that was another way I knew I was right in the early days. In Boston and on the West Coast, I can't remember where it was, maybe upper West, they had two huge studies of homeless people, around 300 or 400 in each case in big homeless shelters. And they saw like 80-90% positivity. So it riddled them. But like the Diamond Princess, they weren't old. They were kind of fairly tough and skinny and not insulin resistant. So what happened? They were nearly all asymptomatic and none of them died. So that story came out in the East Coast and the West Coast, and then quietly it disappeared because the implications of that are like you say. So that story disappeared. No one wanted to talk about it, but it was a clue. It was an enormous clue. And that was it. And they're also out in the weather, and they're probably got brown and rugged and vitamin D is high, even though they're abusing themselves in many other ways. So that was a clue. I'll tell you another one that I told people. I was screaming this at people last April, like, wake up. In terms of lockdowns and all that stuff, the grocery workers were 100% pretty much not locked down. They were the opposite of lockdown because all through Europe, you had grocery workers 10 hours a day stacking shelves with no masks. There were no masks back in April 2020. They were indoors, right? Not outdoors. They were indoors, 8 hours a day, no masks, moving around indoors with what? Floods of the great unwashed who are coming in, right? So if the lockdowns had any efficacy, right, the grocery workers would show a signal. They would obviously have higher infection and mortality. Obviously, but they didn't. So my brother, who's an accountant actually, worked that one out himself. He's not technical. He actually told me that one himself because I asked him, how do you know this is kind of nonsense? And he gave me that example. He worked it out himself. And I said, fair play to you. Fair play to you.
Yeah. And I think it's it's funny because I know a lot of people say, well, Ivor needs to stay in his lane, right? For me, when I start saying this PCR thing, believe it or not, I am an MD. right? I'm board certified in internal medicine. So people say, just talk low carb. Don't talk about this anymore. I was like, but my job is to take care of patients and do the right thing. Right. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm telling you, I'm looking at the numbers. I'm looking at, like, you know how many of my patients have been hospitalized for COVID? Zero. Not one of mine. Lucky. I have a small practice. I've moved to a smaller practice. My old practice, I know, six people, five of them patients that were admitted for vaccination related illnesses, stroke, heart attack, seizure, and psychosis. Right. So I was like, well, my odds, what are your odds? And so that's why when people criticize, when you question it, say, my job is to question it. My job for you, for my patient that I'm sitting before, is like, for you, what are the risks and benefits? If you're 82 years old and or morbidly obese and diabetic and you're eating cookies all day, then that's an easy decision for me. Mm. But if you're a 20-year-old kid who's a triathlete that's super healthy, I have to look at the risks and the benefits, not what people think, what the feeling. And I think, Ivor, I think as an engineer, you're unique for an engineer because you have people skills and you get people, but you're not here to make friends. You're here to say, look, here's what the data shows. Because if the data shows something totally different, you'd say, that's what you're not an arbitrary person to fight the system. You're saying, look, this is what the data shows. Brian, if you don't like it because you have a pre-held belief, that's what the data, and Erdosi too, right? He looks at it, he goes, I don't care what you guys think. This is what the data shows. This is what it is. Here's the study. I'm not here to like make you feel better about yourself. This is what the data shows.
Yeah. Gabor is brutally honest. I mean, he's incredible. And of course, he came to the same conclusions as I did on almost everything. Some slight differences. He was not so believing in dormancy of this virus, that during the summer, say in Europe, it's dormant in tissue in many people, and that's how it triggers again in the winter. But now he's come around to my way of thinking. Right. And around these medications, mass medications, possibly by impacting the immune system. If you do it during the winter, you may awaken dormant virus and actually trigger more problems. So, but yeah, you just have to be always honest. And I found myself now becoming, which is kind of crazy. I was never a libertarian. I never even thought of the word. But I found myself being forced on behalf of my children and all our children into a defender of free society against totalitarianism and medical tyranny and coercion. And God knows where that'll go. So it behooves us all. We're all responsible to maintain a free and healthy society beyond our specific role. And in this case, it's under a bigger threat than I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, sure, World War II was terrible, but in anyone who's 70 or 80 years old or younger, this is the biggest threat to the direction of free society that we've ever in our lives witnessed. And that sounds dramatic, but it's true. Look at what's happening. The mandatory nature, the shutting down of society on the back of bad science. This is serious boiling frog stuff. If you let this go, you're going to end up boiled and it'll be too late to whine later, you know, when you're boiled.
I've had people in my office in tears. They've had a family business for 60 years, gone.
Gone.
You know, gone. Everything's gone. How am I going to pay for this? My kids are home all the time. I'm fighting with my wife, drinking more, gained 40 pounds, 30 pounds. And, you know, when you see those things, that's what we see as doctors. That's what the rest of the population doesn't see because they're watching the news locked in their house, eating donuts, right? And eating Saturday morning cereal in the morning. So I think we see those things, and I've seen the effects on people from a humanitarian standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. And like for you, my last Jesus reference is like, you know, and he came to set the captives free. And I think you were the one saying, guys, your captives, they're saying, well, maybe if you do this and this and this, then you can go outside and breathe, right? And maybe you can exercise, but we'll decide that for you. So I think at some point you have to say, gosh, darn it, am I willing to take the risk of, I was just in Guatemala. My buddies go, okay, we're going to this mountain. We're going to jump in the back of this pickup truck. And we drove and we had a blast. I could have died doing that because here I couldn't do it. I don't have the right to do that here in the States, but it was a beautiful time and we had a great conversation. It was fun. And so sometimes people skydive every day. People are doing stuff and risking their lives and doing stuff. So I think at some point you say, okay, I have to look at the risk and benefits. Now, you know, do I walk a tightrope over, you know, between two tall buildings? No, because that's dumb for me. So, I mean, there's certain things you go, it's worth the risk. Is it worth doing? And I think you're one of those guys who says it's worth the risk because really, on this is such an emotion. Even if you're right, you get destroyed. right? You lose privilege. And there's so many people that were right from the beginning, but people aren't going back and apologize. How many apologies have you gotten from people say, you know, Ivor, you're right after all this?
They can't. It's cognitive dissonance is too profound. So the psychological, this has been studied at length. The people who wed themselves and cannot believe that everyone's wrong, that's a huge driver here. The people I have who are on the fence, they say, well, I know you're right with those numbers, but how are they all wrong? So a lot of people just cannot believe that all the great and good are wrong. They can't do it. No matter what you show them, they can't do it. And if they do begin to deep down realize the horror that they are all wrong and that Ivor's right, they can't admit that because it becomes a profound kind of personal thing that's shameful subconsciously. So we are dealing with, we're going to have decades of psychological damage from this beyond the suicides and everything you described. This is an absolute abomination, what's been done. And the numbers I mentioned earlier, I'll mention them one more time, roughly for Ireland, but for Europe, roughly. After over a year and the hump and the smaller hump, and in the future, regardless of vaccines or meds, you're only going to get smaller humps. That is science. That is the way new viruses go. They're like a skipping pond, a stone on a pond. You get a big one, maybe a biggish second one, and then da-da-da-da-da. That's a fact. After all of that, we are below 70 years of age, less than 1 in 7,000 risk. Below 50 years of age, less than 1 in 50,000. And below 25 years of age, less than 1 in 250,000. Half or less the chances of dying from falling off a stepladder. That's the facts. So that includes, though, remember, those risks I said, they include all the people who have comorbidities. So if you are healthy in any of those age brackets, you can divide them by another 3 or 4. And they get down to basically nothing for anyone under 50. It's almost zero in real world terms. It's less than a severe flu for under 50s, under 60s who are healthy. This is a fact. And yet, like you say, Brian, people somehow wed themselves to the narrative they've been fed, which is largely nonsense. So there you go.
Man, that's a tough one. It really is. I think is there's so much emotion involved. But I think if people look at the actual numbers and say, what are the odds? It really puts things in perspective because people have a perception that 10% of the population has been decimated by that have died. And when you look at the numbers, that's just not what it is. But we were told that at the beginning by Drosten, by all these guys who made these outlandish predictions. And so that fear stayed, and that fear is hard to get rid of when you look at the reality. And I think, obviously, you had to stand the test of time and see what happens, right? You could have been wrong. And if you were wrong, you would be like, you know, ridiculed. I mean, you are anyways being right. But these guys, there's no accountability. There's no price to be paid. I think there's some people working on some things but you never know. There's so much. It's the corruption is absolutely, I mean, it's astounding. The corruption in medicine, I mean, I've never been more disillusioned with medicine, you know, the science. Bad studies published, retracted, you know, quoted studies have been retracted, stuff. And I think when you start, I talked to some good people. As a matter of fact, one of my patients is a chemist for one of the big pharma companies. He worked for a previous well-known pharma company, and they brought a drug to market. They found out 10 years later that the person doing all the other studies on the other side, the clinical stuff, fudged every single number. None of it was real data. And he said, you know, ethically, and he's a guy of great integrity. He said he couldn't sleep. He was devastated and depressed. He goes, I don't know if I'm harming people with this drug that was brought to market on bad data. And it's not in the news. No one's talking about it. Right. And he said, Brian, this is not unusual. And you think, wow, bad data integrity. And that's what I mean. For everything I do, Ivor, for you, even I stand back and I go, what does Ivor have to gain or lose from doing this? And I realized all you can do is lose. All you can do is lose, really, when you start, because for a time, because you get ridiculed and like, he's gone off the deep end, but you were stating facts, showing your numbers. Here's 59 studies that show this. And you backed it up, not just say, yeah, this is what I believe. This is what it is. And so I think this is what's critical for, because there's going to be people, I'm going to get hate mail for this episode. I know that. But, you know, part of it is saying, hey, look, that's the truth as we see it, and say, look, all I can do is go by my clinical experience. And when we started Low Carb MD, you know, people said these guys are crazy. They're talking about addiction and food addiction and carb addiction. Now we have textbooks on the topic and study after study after study that has shown. We saw it clinically. So sometimes you see stuff, you go, this is what I'm seeing. And I think all of us, I think there's a lot of reasonable people who listen that say, yeah, that never made sense, did it? Like, it didn't make sense. And a lot of the stuff we just did it because they told us to. Locking down outside dining, they never had data to do that, but yet we gave up that freedom and people lost their businesses and their well-being and their 401k. All these things happen, and there is definite, you know, and I get it. At the beginning, I think you have to do the, you know, it was a political suicide if you didn't lock down everything while everyone else was, right? But then you look at Sweden's data, you look at all these things, and you know, it's one of those things. And then politically, you know, it was really tough. But I think ethically, I think a lot of doctors knew and saw it, mm-hmm. and they just stood there. Yeah. Just like Nazi Germany, you step by and say, yeah, there's bad stuff happening, but I'm not going to get involved. And so I thank you for your courage of doing that. On the way out, Ivor, this is called Life's Best Medicine, man. I know we talked about a lot of tough stuff today, but for you, what's life's best medicine? What's it gets you up in the morning? What gives you passion and drives you to do what you do?
Yeah, well, what got me into metabolic health, really, when I discovered in 2012, what we all know now about insulin and about, you know, non-diagnosed type 2 diabetes driving most chronic disease. When I discovered all that and realized that I'd been lied to essentially by the establishment for my whole adult life, told to eat margarines, vegetable oils, not eat real food, right? I was angry. So what drives me is, in a certain sense, in a good way, is anger, righteousness. And I know that sounds terrible. It sounds arrogant, but it's true. If someone's going to come out with stuff that hurts people, that's technically untrue and undermines societal health, then I'm on it. And that, for 8 years, I never flagged in my passion to save people, as you know, from type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, etc., because everyone's been misinformed and they've been misled. And that annoys me. And there's so much suffering involved, which also annoys me. So it's a double hitter. And in the last year, what's driving me, obviously, is the abomination of the response to COVID. Not COVID-19. It's a tough disease, severe flu equivalent. That's just the way it is. But the response is hurting vastly more people than were ever being saved by these crazy responses. And that's what I'm motivated. I will go after that on behalf of all our children. Not really for us. We'll get old and die. You know, it's for the children.
Yeah, nothing better than that. Ira, I got to ask you one more thing, man, on the way out. How'd you get the fat emperor? How'd you come up with that, man?
The fat emperor was a few wines with my wife one night. I was beginning this battle and getting on YouTube. And I just realized, because I read a lot and I like analogies and metaphors and all that kind of stuff. I kind of have two sides of the brain working pretty well, the technical, mathematical, and the kind of more literary. I was lucky, a freak of birth. But the emperor, it occurs to me, could represent corporate power that gave us the false story and bad science on fat and cholesterol for decades. But the emperor is also the emperor's new clothes. So all those kind of clinicians and researchers who knew that the cholesterol and fat stuff was nonsense, but said nothing. So there's kind of the emperor's new clothes there. Everyone said nothing. And then the last thing was, I just had this moment where I saw this fat emperor, the sad, overweight, obese, diabetic person who was misinformed and now ends up on their throne, if you will, you know, injecting insulin and trapped in a cycle of appetite that they can't get out of. Well, without advice from good doctors like you, maybe, but they're trapped in that cycle of appetite. And there was just three kind of emperor ideas. It was a metaphor. So the fat emperor, it just fit.
Yeah. And it's prophetic for what you're doing now, because it's the same thing. You're standing up for what's right and for the people. And the same people who are going to pick on you and mock. And, you know, for me, I see stuff. It's like, hey, you know, like these things, like, you know, Ben Bickman, you know, one of my other favorite people on earth, you know, talk of these five things tonight, right?
Like, he's fantastic. And you know what? I it comes back to me. FDR, and I know some people argue with some of his policies, but I'm a huge World War II buff, so I really resonate with what you talk about 30s Germany, and the dangers of saying nothing. But also FDR was an incredible figure, and in the Depression. But remember his Madison Square Gardens, I think, his speech? That 30 seconds.
And we know now that government by organized money is just as dangerous as government by organized mob. Never before in all our history have these forces been so united against one candidate as they stand today. They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
And he says, I am hated across the board by my class, meaning upper class, educated, and I welcome their hatred. So a last thing I'd like to say to anyone who's on the other side who's watching this, they probably won't be watching it to this point. I welcome your hatred because your hatred fuels me. Right. So just think about that.
Yeah. Stand up for what's right. I mean, I think that's it. You may be wrong sometimes, but stand up for your rights and stand up for other people and do the right thing as you see it, and then change course when you need to. I'll recommend a book to everyone listening. It's called A Higher Call. It's a great story. World War II, fantastic. We'll talk about it offline, but great. It's really about the integrity. It's really about the integrity of pilots fighting against each other. But there was a mutual respect, and they cared about each other, even though they're shooting each other down. And so, it basically is the story of a German pilot who rescued an American plane that was totally crippled, that he couldn't shoot down when it was crippled. And then they became friends later after the war. So it's an amazing thing. But I think about that in life sometimes now. It's like we fight each other over calories in, calories out versus low carb. It's like, really, does that matter in the scheme of things? And I think that's probably why you transcended over to what you're doing now, because what you do with your work with cholesterol and all this is critical stuff. And this is critical also. So I think this is a bigger calling. I think this is a huge, huge calling that you have to say, okay, I'm willing to take the bullets, and I'm willing to say it. I was worried for you, Ivor, with this stuff, because I know there's a lot of vested interest, a lot of bad stuff that people don't want messages getting out and making people think and use their logic and reasoning and life experience. So I commend you on that, and I have a lot of respect. And one of these days we'll be tipping down a glass of wine and talking about life and what really matters. And that's what this podcast is about, really. And that's why I wanted to have you on. You know, some people may find it controversial what we're talking about, but I think it's true what we're saying, to us at least, and what our life experience is, and our goal is to help people. That's what really I struggle with. That say, okay, does this help people or hurt people, what I'm saying? You know, if I get out there and publicly talk about it, because for me, faith is really important, and hope. And I think when we go through times like this, these are dark days for sure. But like you said, there's barbecues and hanging out with your friends and really having people, you find a community of people that are like-minded that you can live life with, you know? And I think, what I really look at is, look, your Twitter timeline, right? My Twitter timeline says a lot about us as people. And you could look back and say, we were questioning things and say, wait, what about this? This could be a problem. At least raising it, and at least, you know, you're not sold out to industry, and I know your integrity. So all these things are so important. I think people just need to know that you're not just an obstructionist, a rebel that's just fighting without having information. You're not just there to fight and hurt people. I know your intentions are always good. So I think I just wanted people to know that. And so everyone, we went a little long, but when I have the fat emperor, I'm going to go long, man. We don't get to talk across the pond very often, but thank you so much for listening. Thank you for your time. Hopefully this speaks to you, and that you can think a little bit and look at the numbers and research for yourself. Don't take anyone's word for it. And be kind to yourself, be kind to others. Have a great week. Thank you for listening. Ivor, thank you for listening. You. Thanks for coming, man. I appreciate it. It's always great.
Great stuff, Brian. Anytime. Cheers, man.
Cheers.
And just a reminder that I do need support to continue putting together all of this content, and at patreon.com/IvorCummins, or for PayPal, please see the description below this video or the pinned comment, and you can do a one-off or a monthly support. So I'd really appreciate that, guys, and keep me getting the science out there and countering perhaps the more biased corporate type science. Thank you.